Welcome to One Decent Pastor, a weekly podcast of The Door located in Central Oregon, where three completely average guys join forces to make one decent pastor and to discuss, discover, and promote all things Bible.
And we're live on One Decent Pastor.
That's how we start out every podcast.
Yeah, nice. Super,
I like it. I don't know what else. I've fiddled around with different things, and I don't know what else to say.
And we're live.
Just do the best radio voice I got.
Actually, your voice saying that is right. Like, if we didn't have that to start, it would be weird.
Yeah.
So,
You guys, it's for your benefit. It's not for the audience benefit, because they know when we go live, but you guys need to know when we go live.
Yes.
So yeah. I do it for you guys.
Thanks, Chad.
Yeah. Appreciate you.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
How's that new Traeger? Sorry, hang on. Yeah. This is Aaron. Yeah.
First things first.
Hey, guys. Turkey second, Aaron first.
Yeah. Okay. The new Traeger is good. So my Traeger bit the dust.
Do you want to finish with Aaron?
I just was rolling. This whole thing is about Aaron.
Aaron's your buddy.
Yeah.
Well, I just got a new Traeger too, Chad, so we're in good company, man.
Yeah.
There you go.
Did yours break the 2 days before Thanksgiving?
No.
Neither did Chad. Yeah, he just wanted a new one.
No, it bit the dust.
Yeah.
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 But it did well.
It did the job.
And how big was your turkey?
21 pounds.
Did you spatch that thing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You didn't do that this year, right?
Just did it in the oven.
That's too bad.
No, it worked out great.
It was good.
Crispiest skin I've ever had on a turkey.
How long did you have to have it in the oven, though?
Like 3.5 hours.
Oh, that's not bad, actually.
No, it was perfect.
Yeah.
And it caught all the drippings, and then we made the best gravy.
So you're saying you're not going to go back to the smoker? You're going to just keep doing the oven?
Maybe occasionally, but the crisp skin won me over.
Aaron, do they deep fry turkeys out in Prideville?
I've had a deep fried turkey. there are a few that get deep fried in Prineville. Yes. Yeah.
I would
imagine.
So. How did you do your turkey?
We did ours in the oven. Yeah.
Okay.
That's pretty traditional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. All right. I'm done with the turkey talk. Just had to catch up.
Okay. Well, yeah. We did have last week off, so.
And you were sick, which stinks.
So. Yeah, I had a head cold, not like in bed sick with the flu, but head cold. Yeah.
You're better now.
Yeah.
You sound better.
I loaded up a plate, and I took maybe 5 bites and just thought, nah, can't do it.
Wow, that's not like you, Chad.
I was going to say, that must mean Chad wasn't feeling well.
Yeah, that's a true sign for sure that you're not feeling good.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Huh.
Crazy.
So obviously Pastor Terry's not here.
Pastor Terry
should have started the program. Yeah.
He's in a sunny, warm place.
Pastor Terry's in a sunny place.
Yeah, he's in a warm
Arizona,
climate.
So, and the part of Pastor Terry is now being played by Pastor Aaron.
That's right.
So you can introduce him.
Yeah, Aaron Mapes, my longtime buddy. When did we, like, probably middle school-ish around there? We've known each other for a while.
We had to have known each other then. Yeah.
Did you ride BMX bikes?
Did you go up jumps? I did not. I was not in the BMX crew.
No, I wasn't part of that circle.
Sorry. Yeah.
Were you part of the Luke Hendricks youth group?
To some degree, yeah. So we had, I actually was a part of another youth group, but we had such a regular time spent with each other. I knew Luke pretty well and really appreciated his ministry. Yeah.
It's pretty cool to see all the different ways
all
the men he's affected in his life and guys that have gone on to be pastors and stuff.
It really is great.
Pretty remarkable time in the history of Prineville, Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really was,
So you two go way back. Middle school.
We do.
So I think we went to rival grade schools, so we were maybe rivals for a time.
Wow. Yeah, were you an Ochoco kid? Ochoco?
I was Crooked River.
We were rivals until middle school.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then we became buddies.
Yeah.
And we hung out, and we worked at a golf course together. We worked at Middle Lakes Golf
you were
Course.
Part of that?
Probably the best job I've ever had.
Oh, definitely the funnest
aside
job.
From pastoring, right?
Yeah. Do you guys mean the sewage plant?
Okay.
Yeah. But you call it a golf course.
Sorry.
I had to.
No. Google it if you're listening. There's a whole history there. It was pretty remarkable when it was built.
But okay.
Yeah. Yep. Google it. Anyway.
Did it glow green at night?
No, it didn't glow green.
Like the nitroglycerin?
No. And the cool part about it is, like, it opened the year that I graduated high school. You were a year behind me in high school.
Correct. Yeah.
Opened the year I graduated, so a bunch of our buddies got jobs there.
Yeah.
And so they all got on the grounds crew. Aaron and I landed jobs in the pro shop.
Nice.
Yes.
Ooh. And so we had the nice, easy, cushy
job. We had the cush job.
That's awesome.
And we got tips instead of the guys just cutting the greens.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Right.
Huh. Yeah.
And when the restaurant guys would go play golf, they'd tip us in cheeseburgers.
Yep.
They'd make us something off the menu.
It sounds like a good childhood.
It was a good job. Yeah.
It was a great job.
Yeah.
Great. Job. Huh.
Yeah, we might have caused a little mischief together over the years.
Probably a little bit. I'm sure that we had our fair share.
So I'm going to jump ahead. He has his agenda, which he'll get to.
Yeah.
So from high school, Did you know what you wanted to do, what you wanted to be, where you wanted to go?
I would say a loose idea of that. Yeah, I probably had ambitions of owning my own company and, you know, making it big. You know, American Dream.
Okay.
Was probably what I was.
So it wasn't ministry.
Yeah. It was not ministry.
It wasn't American Gospel. It was American Dream.
It was American Dream, not American Gospel. Here? Yeah, that was nice. Yeah. I like that.
We should segue.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
Too early.
It's too early.
You can't peek, too soon.
You can't peek right out.
Too soon.
Got to wait. Yeah. Stay tuned for more.
So did you grow up in the church?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
definitely grew up in the church.
Okay. Okay. Cool. All right. I'll let you go.
No, you said something that triggered a thought that I hadn't thought about for a long time. You and I had a business venture for a little while.
We did.
It was pretty short lived.
It was. Well, yeah.
You know, maybe 6 months. I don't know.
we got our feet wet with it a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
Is this a rapping in old folks' homes? Beastie Boys songs?
Did it include two turntables and a microphone?
No, yeah. No.
No. No.
No. That was that was an earlier business venture of mine with somebody else.
Sorry. We have different iterations of Chad. You got Cowboy Chad, rapper Chad.
Oh man,
you know,
I've been a part of a lot of them. Yeah, yeah. I've seen a lot of the iterations. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So we got some. We already kind of covered some questions, but maybe talk a little bit about your church background. So what church are you at? How long? How'd you get there?
Ooh, I'll try to keep that.
Been there?
Yeah, like, I'll try to keep that condensed.
Yeah, I know there's a little bit of a story.
Because there's definitely a story in there, but I'll try to condense that. So,
well, what church did you grow up in?
So I grew up in Prineville First Assembly Church.
Okay, okay.
So that's kind of the part of the story. Of course, I'm now back pastoring the church that I grew up in. So
that's rad.
Yeah, it really is pretty neat how that all came about. So that's where I'm at, and how I got there. Chad and I were both at Calvary Chapel for quite a while, and then of course Chad made it over to Lapine. I stayed at Calvary Chapel for a little while, and
we were both elders together.
We were, and so we stayed a little bit past that time there at the Prineville Calvary Chapel. We felt like the Lord was calling us out to church plant. And during that time, we started taking some steps forward in that, just knowing that we felt like this was the right time. And as we started to do that, I was actually on a fishing trip up in Alaska, and we had started planting with the Oregon Ministry Network. We had thought, I'll leave this part of the story out, but we thought we were going to Calvary Chapel. The Lord called us kind of to go back the way that we came from our roots.
The Oregon Ministry Network, that's Assembly
and that's
of God,
Oregon
right?
Ministry Network is Assembly of God. Yeah. So we started the process of church planting with the Oregon Ministry Network, and I got a call while I was on a fishing trip in Alaska that the pastor in Prineville at the First Assembly Church had resigned, and they asked me if I wanted to be the interim pastor while we were in the church planting process.
Oh, wow.
And so through that conversation, I just kind of seemed like the Lord might be opening up some doors. And I asked the lead church planting director at the time, I said, hey, should we actually be just putting in a resume? I mean, I think this is a church that needs to be replanted. I thought his response was funny. He said, do you want to? And I said, well, I don't know if it's much about as wanting to do something as it is. I think it would be the right thing for us to at least explore it. All the other things have lined up that we just bought a house here in the community. We're working in the school district here.
Yeah.
It just makes sense. And so the only challenge to that was leaving a really thriving family church just down the road and then jumping into a church where we're the only family.
Yeah.
And so that was a real challenge.
Yeah. I remember you had trepidation about
that. That was difficult. Interestingly enough, I just came to find out that not long before we made that jump, though, Rory and Lindsay lived in the same neighborhood as the pastor of the church at the time.
Okay.
And
Rory's the pastor at Calvary.
Rory's the pastor at Calvary, and then
Ryan Couch was not the pastor at the time, right?
That's correct. Yeah, Rory was the pastor, and Rory and Lindsay were walking in their neighborhood, and the pastor of the Assembly of Church at the time was there, and I think that he just was getting on in years in ministry, and Rory's wife Lindsay looked at Rory and said, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Aaron and Stephanie pastor that church. And Rory's like, no. She's like, it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Wow.
And then here we are, and that's exactly what happened.
How long have you been there now, then?
So we've been there just over 5 years.
5 years. Okay.
Yeah, 5 years.
Were you at Calvary when Ryan was there?
I actually was at Calvary for a season when Ryan was there. I'm going to say maybe 1 to 2 years kind of Ryan.
Yeah. So are you like a 4-point couchist or a 5-point couchist? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So I came along when they were just transitioning buildings. So they had been meeting in another space, and they moved into another building, and that's when my wife and I really started to get involved in Calvary Chapel.
I know this isn't, I'm hijacking things, but when you say replant,
yes,
needed to be, what do you mean by that church needed to be replanted?
So it had, when I was young growing up, it had been a thriving church of probably about 250, 300 people. And through the years, that had declined down to, the membership was down to about 20, which in the Assemblies of God, when you get down below 20 members, that particular church reverts back to what we call a network-affiliated church until it's healthy enough to be governed by its own board. And so it was about to revert back if they had lost any additional members. So when we came in, it had been what many would have looked at and said was a dying church.
Yeah.
And so we looked at that, and that would have definitely been, for the Oregon Ministry Network, how can we get that church thriving again? So I think they would have been looking at that as hey, we need to replant that church in the community.
Revitalization.
Yeah. It would be a revitalization. Yeah.
Okay.
Rescue?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Real quick, because I know this is going to come up, maybe we set the foundation for people watching that aren't super familiar with Assemblies of God.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a denomination, an affiliation? What are the distinctives? What makes the Assemblies of God the Assemblies of God? Because this is going to come up.
Yeah,
we need
absolutely.
To we need to lay this down.
And I know Chad actually like, hey, you know,
can we just
this,
start ripping on you right now?
Totally
kidding.
So I guess the technical definition is we're a voluntary cooperative fellowship. It's not a denomination in the true sense of the word. A lot of times denominations will own the property of the church.
I didn't know either. That's why I wanted to clarify.
Yeah. So really, we choose to affiliate. But there are some things that are denomination like.
Yeah.
There are certainly distinctives. Like Calvary Chapel has their distinctives.
Yeah.
Assemblies has what they call their 16 fundamental truths. Those are the things that if you're going to to affiliate, they ask that you would of course subscribe to those those doctrines. And the churches are sovereign. We own our own buildings and property. We could, in theory, choose to disaffiliate if we wanted to. I think one of the things that makes the Assemblies of God unique.
In theory. Yeah. I want to focus on that. Go ahead.
One of the things about the Assemblies of God is it started out primarily as a missions-driven organization. And that was really the idea behind organization was, hey, we could do world missions better together than we can as individual churches.
Sure.
So that was really a lot of the coming together as a broader movement.
Yeah.
And that's still reflected in its makeup, because I would say the Assemblies, in terms of the per capita number of missionaries that they send out, is probably one of the strongest, if not the strongest, still
awesome.
in the modern evangelical movement. So that's still true to their true to their roots. And one of the things then that comes with that, much like the SBC has the IMB Mission Board, they have their own sending agency, AGWM, AG World Missions. So I would say those are probably some of the things that's the main corporate aspect is missions, even though the individual churches are independent and sovereign. But that makes it easier for missionaries who are raising funds to be able to network. And I think that's probably one of its greatest strengths.
Awesome. So is Youth of the Mission still affiliated with Assemblies, or is that
no, not directly?
Kind of branched off?
They ultimately branched off.
Okay.
I think they they had at one point said, "Hey," because there was a lot of Assemblies roots in YWAM.
Sure.
But I think at some point there was a little bit of this doesn't really fit in directly to what we do, and so it became its own independent but connected, if you will, organization. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you.
We don't have time to go through like all the 16 things about the distinctives or whatever you call them, but like what are maybe kind of a couple Assemblies of God distinctives
or what are maybe the top ones or
okay. Yeah. The one that's going to be the most obvious would probably be, because it is a Pentecostal denomination.
No seatbelts.
No
safety harnesses.
In theory, there's definitely seatbelts. In practice, sometimes I wonder. But I would say that because it's Pentecostal, there is a distinctive that says the idea of the baptism of the Holy Spirit, the evidence of that is the evidence of initial physical evidence of speaking in tongues. So I'd say that's probably the... what separates it from a Baptist church, honestly, would be probably that particular distinctive would be that initial evidence. I think most everything else you'd go down the list, it's very similar to Calvary Chapel, even though Calvary Chapel doesn't necessarily have that particular distinctive in praxis. I would say that that's still probably something that you would find in a lot of Calvary chapels as well. And I would say the emphasis on that over the years has probably lessened than when I grew up in the particular fellowship. Yeah,
sure,
for sure.
Yeah.
So is that seen as like a like an absolute sign of salvation?
No. Not to be confused with maybe like a oneness type of a scenario where there's an idea that you have to speak in tongues in order to be an evidence of salvation. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely not. The assemblies would definitely say to that.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So it's good news for us.
Yeah. So I'm allowed to still be on the podcast today, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in the Foursquare Church, and so you and I grew up very, very similarly, and I always kind of distinguished Foursquare from Assembly with, you know, suits versus no suits. I don't know if that's still the case, but like back in the day, like, you guys dressed nicer than we did.
I guess. I haven't seen it. I pull out a suit at weddings and funerals, and that's about it, so... But I would say maybe traditionally, you know, going back into the 70s, 80s, maybe even early 90s, you might have seen that. Maybe still a little bit in the South. Yeah.
That totally makes sense. So it kind of leads into something else I wanted to address. So we were talking with an Assemblies of God pastor here maybe a couple months back. And he was alluding to just kind of some shifts within the Assemblies of God. And maybe some under the radar. We didn't talk about it deeply, so it was a very brief conversation. But he's just like things are kind of shifting within the Assemblies of God, and maybe there's a little more kind of a reformed presence within the Assemblies of God. And I don't know if people are cool saying that or not saying it, you know, if it's still, you know, kind of behind closed doors type of thing. But you've been in the denomination for a long time, and you have kind of a family heritage in the denomination or the non-denomination movement.
The non-denomination fellowship, whatever it is.
The sort of denomination.
Cooperative.
It's a good cooperative, sort of, cooperative fellowship, sure.
Anyway, are you seeing shifts like that within the Assemblies of God?
I would say to a limited degree, yes. I think that you have a more diverse group of younger ministers coming in. That I think when you have people that aren't necessarily homegrown inside a fellowship, then you see that more frequently. I would say it's still so when I converse with other pastors and I say names like you know Bodie Bauckham or John Piper. Some of them still look at me like, who are you talking about? But I would say that that's not as uncommon as it used to be. There's certainly a younger generation that's more, probably because of we're just an internet generation now, that are have more access to more resources. And I think that has
helped. The good, the bad, and the ugly.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but I think that there's been a... because of that, a little bit of shift. I would say there's not a lot of people who are more on the reformed spectrum within the denomination, but I would say that's not as uncommon as it used to be.
Well, we had Andrew Murch.
That's what I was talking about.
You were talking about Andrew? He like grew up, he has a whole background.
Yeah.
And he was talking about that there was kind of a like a robust like group of people that were reformed. He says that he knew more reformed people in their soteriology. Then he didn't, and I just
thought interesting.
I thought that was weird.
I would say in my I just got back from general counsel, and I would not probably characterize that as a fellowship wide characteristic, but there might be pockets of that, and I would say that's going to be more likely here in the Northwest.
You might have just been in a pocket.
I was going to say that there is certainly some of that, but I still often feel like that's a low percentage. Okay.
So
from my experience,
and I want to hit something before we move on. You you were talking about younger people coming in.
Yes. Yeah.
What does that look like? Do you see a lot of younger people still coming to into the Assemblies of God affiliation, or do you see less? Or because it seems like the trend has been away from traditional American what people would think are denominations,
right
to something more free, more cowboyish. Are people coming in?
So I would say overall yes. I think if you look at the statistics from the last 5-10 years, we continue to see, while a lot of A lot of denominations and mainline churches are regularly kind of shrinking in membership. Yeah. These numbers have stayed pretty steady or had growth numbers through most of that time. I would say some of that, though, if you were to break those numbers down a little further, you'd see a lot of that in our ethnic fellowships, especially. There's been strong growth in various ethnic fellowships within the Assemblies of God. But we are seeing quite a bit of young people.
Nice.
I can speak, you know, at least for what we're seeing here in Central Oregon, a lot of younger people coming into our fellowships here. But I would say it's probably like a lot of groups, though, there's probably still skews a little bit older. I think people are, there's been a large shift towards, especially with Gen Z and millennials, towards non-denominational. They don't necessarily want corporate religion, you know, in that sense. And so they associate denominations or big groups with that. Institutional religion, we might call it. Yeah.
Do you guys have educational outlets that are Assemblies of God? Do you still have seminaries?
Yeah.
Or
yes.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess the attendance for those or whatever would tell kind of the story too.
Yeah. I think what's interesting though is I would say that attendance at some of those are either are declining or at least ministry is declining. Because I would say if you were to survey pastors in various networks around the United States,
who wants to do this?
There's a leadership pipeline issue, right? There's a pipeline shortage, and so. But I don't think that's uncommon. I think a lot of places are facing that.
I don't know if you saw the podcast with Luke a while back. But he talked about that.
Yeah, that's kind of why I brought it up.
Yeah.
Called it the silver wave. You've got
this
group of older pastors that are retiring, and there's not really many people coming up behind them.
Backfilled.
So. For sure. I think, too, one of the things we're seeing is our rural churches stay open a lot longer. It's harder to find bivocational pastors. Yeah. It's harder to fill those slots. They seem to take longer to fill. And we're just seeing, again, a shortage of a lot of churches looking for, youth pastors, children's pastors,
right?
And there just seems to be a shortage of those. Yeah.
Well, let's kind of shift and talk about your church a little bit. I mean, it's all God's church, right? But the church that you pastor,
absolutely.
Prineville First Assembly. So you talked about, kind of coming in to a dying church. What has that looked like to? Like, what's the revitalization work been in the last few years?
Yeah, that's a great question. Hard.
Yeah.
Hard work. I think that anything that's going to be solid takes time. I think when we first stepped into that scenario, it was discouraging because we were the only family to get started, and then my sister and brother-in-law joined us, so that was helpful. But there wasn't a robust family ministry, which are what most people are looking for, quote unquote, when they're shopping for churches. And so and then all the support ministries that come along with that. I'm not a worship leader, so thank goodness my daughter was able to help out in that. But we struggled in every way of like how do we provide enough. So we were very busy. So we were youth pastors every Friday night. We were, trying to invest in ministries. And we went into it knowing that at least year one or two, if something was going to happen, we were probably going to have to do it. So there was a lot of labor that went into that. And we were very determined not to do, I guess, the things that you see in the typical church growth model that we grew up in the 90s. We really didn't want to try to say, hey, let's be attractional. We said, and actually, I'm going to credit Chad with this in the philosophy, because we spent a lot of time together at Calvary Chapel. And one of the things that just stuck with me was Chad was talking about, hey, what we catch people with, we have to keep them with. So if we catch them with a bunch of attractional things, that's what we got to keep them with. If we catch them with
credit
Jesus,
Spurgeon for that.
I know, but I'm saying you that's the first time I shared it. Yeah,
Wayne Gretzky, so, Michael Scott.
There you go.
Aaron Mabes, Chad Carpenter, Charles Spurgeon.
So we're passing the praise down the line. But it was Chad that really articulated that for me for the first time, and I think when I looked at the ministry models that that I had been involved in my whole life. Yeah. I felt like I don't know how many disciples we're making versus how much we're trying to keep an endless buffet of options for people to be satisfied by. Yeah. And so as we went into ministry, my thought was, you know what, we're going to preach the word, and if we catch them with Jesus, that's all we'll ever have to keep them with. So we knew we weren't going to be the best worship show in town. We knew we weren't going to have all the other things in a children's ministry. We just focused on what matters most, and we're going to build from there.
It's good.
Yeah. Very good.
So how does the church? I mean, we won't get like fixated on numbers, but you know, you came into a small church that was kind of on the brink of,
and during COVID, no less, right?
Yeah, and during COVID, which didn't help. Yeah. What does that look like today in terms of like your attendance? I mean, how has the church grown?
Yeah,
as a result of that work?
So we were sitting around. I mean, when I say we had 23 in attendance, that meant if everybody showed up, we had 23 people.
Yeah.
I would say average Sunday now a little over 100, and probably 150 people per week that would be involved in various ministries. And actually, that's grown significantly because I keep forgetting about Veritas, our young adults ministry. But I'd say we're probably doing ministry with maybe 150 to 175 unique people per month.
Nice.
So it's grown significantly. And
multi-generational?
Yeah, multi-generational. Yeah, we have in fact, I just had some missionaries that visited about a month ago, and they said, is it always like this? And I said, what do you mean? And they said, well, you've got such a range of ages here.
Yeah.
So
cool.
And because we have a bunch of young adults that actually attend service. And I said, yeah, it's pretty much like this every week.
That's awesome.
So we have a really strong, every generation is represented.
Seems to be a sign of health.
One of those people is my mom.
Yes.
Yeah, so my mom has been going to the fellowship for a little while now.
Yeah, I love seeing your mom. She always gives me a hug, and it's great.
I think she's digging it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't have this on the list because I kind of forgot about it. But talk about the young adults ministry. That seems to be really thriving.
It's booming.
I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's young adults that aren't even necessarily part of your church.
That's correct.
Like it's kind of a conglomerate of young adults.
Yeah. So what we've seen, probably not unlike a lot of youth ministries. I don't think a lot of youth pastors would be surprised when they have look at the demographics of their youth group and say, man, a lot of these come from families that don't attend our church. And I think that's pretty common in youth ministry. And what we're seeing is that we started a young adults ministry called Veritas. And as we've been engaging in that, we actually started that almost out of the gate because I had a daughter who was basically college age.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, hey, why don't you get a few of your friends together? We'll just meet in our house and we'll study the word. But the idea is we're gonna seek truth, and we know that Jesus is where truth is found, and the word of God is where truth is found. Mm-hmm. So that's where we're gonna start as our source. And so we started small. It went through a few iterations where it kind of grew, and then the next generation came in, because as you guys know, young people, there's a transient age there. They move around a lot.
Totally.
And so then we had it kind of shrink back down, and we had a few original members that were pretty faithful, and then they grew again and shrunk back down, and then started growing this last January, and it's just been booming ever since. So I think
we've
got
pictures
about
on Facebook of just
we outgrew our house. We couldn't do it anymore. Huh?
So you're leading that still.
We're leading that. Yeah, we're starting to develop some a ministry team to help lead that. Yeah, but yes, currently, I am still leading that, and we've just transitioned out of our house and created a space upstairs in the church that kind of mimics our living room. Yeah. It's just a lot bigger because we wanted to keep that feel.
Right.
And so we've got about probably 40 to 45 that attend every week now.
Super cool.
Yeah. And how are you defining young? Like, is it high school age and college age, or is
it's 18,
like post
high school.
Okay.
18 to, we call it 25-ish because we have, some that come there 28, 29. We don't really put as much of an emphasis on the upper number. But the lower number, we try to keep that as close as possible to 18. Yeah. Sometimes we'll say seniors in high school because there are some that are just done with youth group and ready for something that's a little bit more. But I would say 18 to 25-ish is our demographic.
Yeah.
I'm jealous, man. Those are the best ages.
Oh, man. It's
partially selfish for you, isn't it?
Yeah. I would tell you this. Steph and I, that's one of our favorite ministry nights of the week.
Totally.
We love it. And they'll hang out till 11, even sometimes midnight at the church. And we'll just hang out. Some of the best conversations actually happen afterwards.
Right.
It is a really fun group to minister to.
We had a young adults group here for a while, and it was the best. Same thing. It was high school, college age, and we'd go out and eat together afterward or whatever, and the conversations were just
Oh, it's amazing. And yeah. And to Chad's point, too, he asked, you know, we have about 20 of those that regularly come over every week from Bend. Mm-hmm. And so we have a large group that comes faithfully almost every single week. Wow. From Bend, a few from Redmond, a couple from Madras. So we're pulling from the region. And so for a small church, that's a pretty big ministry.
Yeah.
That's
cool.
Yeah.
You've got another kind of big ministry at the church. Talk about the school for a second. So maybe just a little bit of the history of the school.
And was that, I was going to say, was that previous or is that something you guys
So
breathed life into?
Well, a little bit of both. It was previous. So when I was a senior in high school, the church board voted to set up a school. It started in the church and was started by an awesome woman named Sue Uptain, now Sue Gillum, and just an incredible woman of God, just amazing. God gave her vision. She ran with it, and so the school was set up and thriving for several years.
Did you know I was the first PE teacher at that school?
No, I don't think I knew
back
that.
In the day.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Hang on a second.
Yeah.
You were?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because you know he's so active and yes. He likes to exercise so much.
Yeah. It explains so much about you, Chad.
You were wondering.
Now we have PE Chad to go with Cowboy Chad and
you
be
were wondering. Yeah. You were wondering where his physique came from,
dude.
This
would have been the easiest PE class ever.
This is rad.
Oh, it wasn't easy. That's why I didn't last. I was a hardcore PE teacher. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. We're gonna have fun with that. You got PE Chad. Yeah. PE Chad. So I actually was a senior because I was going back when I was looking through some of the history of the church minutes, board minutes, and things like that, and came back and saw my name on the membership list because I had turned 18 years old, and saw my name on the membership list the year that they were getting the school established. So I thought that was kind of neat. Yeah. So we came, and in 2015, there had been a transfer. There was another school that came in and started leasing the buildings. So when Stephanie and I came in as pastors, we started teaching at that school. And without going into details, about 3 years ago, we replanted Crook County Christian School and it's basically in its original form. And in doing that, we've just seen really amazing. Like God's doing. Awesome. There's so much fruit.
Are there any other Christian schools in?
There are. So the school that was leasing the buildings when we got there still is also in the community. Okay. So there's Prineville actually has two Christian schools.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So. So it's but we've just seen a tremendous fruit. I love it because we get to disciple students 8 hours a day. And where else do you get that?
Right.
Especially, I think it's so critical in the season and world history that we're in to be able to have access to be able to just impart Jesus to them every single day. And we're also seeing great academic success. You know, I think I just saw something this week. Oregon's fourth graders are literally 50 out of 50th in the nation. We're bottom of the barrel in reading. But at our school in particular, our students last year were in the top 70% in the nation. Awesome. So they are really thriving. And all of our students in their national exams were above grade level as classes. I wouldn't say. I mean, we have a few students that weren't above grade level, but as classes, every class was at or significantly above grade level compared to other schools. Nice. So we were very pleased with that. And it started out originally with Sue's vision. She said, if we teach them to read, they can read the word, hide it in their heart, and it'll prepare them for the days ahead. So when we got back in, we just said we're going to make reading key, because if they learn how to read, then they can learn how to learn as they grow. So we said we're going back to the basics. We taught them how to read, and it has just produced nothing but fruit.
So here's a question. This might be an odd question, but how do you balance your role between pastor and principal? Church and principal.
You're the
of
principal,
school.
Bro.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I'll be honest.
Do you have a paddle in your office? Is there a paddle?
No. We don't do that.
Don't spare the rod, man. Get them into the 90th percentile.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So it's been challenging. I would say that the first 2 years, I was really looking past the role, saying, this is necessary, and I can't wait till we have enough students to be able to transition me out of this role, and then I just become superintendent, kind of make sure vision is getting executed, that there's synergy between church and the school so those don't get out of sync. But this year, the Lord really, I felt like, put a conviction in my heart to say, stop looking past this. This is primary ministry. Mm-hmm. You're in front of these kids on a regular basis, and these are disciples to be made right now. And I don't want to, church ministry is amazing, and we have to do both things. Right. But it can be really hard to get people who are really settled into life into discipleship. And every day these kids come and they're ready to learn and they're ready to be disciples. So I was looking past a ministry that the Lord said, stop thinking that as secondary. This is primary. Yeah. Give it all you've got. So as we were doing that, I'm still looking forward to the day when I can have an administrator in there where I will move into that superintendent role and really disciple that administrator and the staff members. But for now, we're all in.
Yeah.
Have you seen much yet? Because I know this is kind of a newer replant.
Yeah.
Not brand new, but new, yeah. newish. Have you seen many, you know, families that weren't previously connected to the church kind of move into the church as a result of their kids going to the school?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the other things is there's been kind of a revitalization of in the community of we've been really active with saying we need to get involved with other churches. And so for us, it's such a great thing as I'm developing relationships with Gabe Bales at the Gathering. Obviously have relationships with Calvary Chapel, still my second church family there. First Bay, First Baptist, Mike Fay. First Bay, combine that together.
First Bay.
First Baptist,
Mike's
Mike Fay.
Bay.
Yeah. So all these pastors that I regularly am getting together with, my staff members go to their churches. I've got kids from their churches coming to our school. It makes it feel even that more connected. Our youth groups, we were talking about how networked they were back then. Just this last year, there's been a real synergy with our youth groups, getting them all together at least once a quarter. And they actually just did a combined camp up at Ochoco Christian Conference Center and are getting ready to do some more events like that. So so we're seeing that that networking of the body of Christ. And I would say the school is just one more avenue of ministry to the community that brings the body of Christ together. Yeah. And that's been amazing.
Nice. It sounds like, in general, just from what I've heard from you, that Prineville's always kind of had that feel in the church culture.
It has, yeah.
Where it didn't seem like a ton of competition.
Yeah, right.
That's probably always there, but it seems almost more unified.
There's been
typically
a good unity that has been there for a long time.
That's fantastic.
For sure.
Yeah.
There's been a great unity. I would say maybe the last. I would say that it, right now, though, is something I haven't seen in the last 10 or 12 years of a renewed emphasis. Pastor saying we need to get together.
Yeah. As not what it was. Yeah. It's, you know, it's
but, it, but it's coming back to that. But it's never been a real feel of competition.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's been really, really great to have that unity of the body.
Yeah, you're pulling the same direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. For the same reason.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And that's awesome. So I guess I'd say that's just growing all the more. Right.
Yeah,
it's increasing.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great. We got a question in the chat because we are live, and then we'll move on to their topic. So Pastor Terry, who's not here, he's chiming in from Arizona.
Nice.
He says, welcome, Aaron. Great podcast. Question, does your church or AOG in general have some kind of plan for training up future leaders?
Ooh. So I would say because of the pipeline issue we talked about, the assemblies at large is trying to figure out ways to address this. I know our Oregon Ministry Network just started a school of ministry. It's largely more towards raising up what I would say lay leaders in the church who maybe I was an accountant, but I'm feeling a call to ministry. I'm going to do some work on the side to kind of get that going. Our church, we are getting ready this fall. Just to add one more thing to the plate. We're actually getting ready to start a internship program with that in mind. We want to
and naturally, you'll leave that.
Yeah.
I assume you clean the church too.
Yeah, yeah. So, no. Thank goodness we got the cleaning teams. I jump in when needed, but I've got an amazing. We've got an amazing volunteer team, but we just recognize the need, and I think there's a theme here. We're all in on this generation.
Right.
We believe that this generation is hungry. And is needing guidance in discipleship, and so we are, whether it's the school, whether it's youth ministry, young adults, we're really looking at that and saying, let's start investing. And I've come to believe that the best model is mentorship, as opposed to, hey, let's just send them off to university, get them back here, and then we'll figure out. I think you can bring the education component alongside.
Sure.
I think the mentorship is far more important. So that's the approach we're taking. We're gonna mentor ministry leaders and at the same time bring their education into it through a partnership program with a university.
Nice. Side note, I wanted to mention this earlier, and I kind of forgot about it, and the thought just came back into me. It's worth it. So you mentioned, like, your sister and your brother-in-law are part of the ministry team. Your parents also are part, which I think is kind of cool that you have your parents and your sister, and so kind of, you know, your whole family and your kids are pretty involved. And I just think that was cool and worth mentioning.
Yeah. It really has been a blessing to have family helping in such key areas.
And your parents have been a part of that church for... ever.
Since 1984.
It's
a while.
Well, let's shift and talk about American Gospel.
You
guys have seen, you're familiar with American Gospel. What are, maybe just quickly, what are your guys' thoughts on the, at least the two installments that we've seen of American Gospel?
Yes. God is good.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I mean, we've promoted that. You know,
we promote it. We think that they're doing a good work educationally. They're just trying to educate people on some of the trends and just church culture in general. Maybe some of the errors and the faults of evangelicalism that a lot of people have bought into without realizing they bought into it.
For sure.
So it's you know, they put bumpers up that are biblical and conservative. Yeah. The first one dealt with basically the gospel, right? Like, what is the true gospel as opposed to the 31 flavors of fake ones that we've all been taught to be the real gospel. And I found that to be, like, really well done. Yeah. The editing and everyone they got on there was awesome. What was the second one?
Second was Christ Crucified. So really dealing with the attack on penal substitutionary.
I didn't see the second one. The first one I thought was great.
The second one I saw pieces of, didn't see all of the second one. But obviously that's a big question these days, is just the atonement in general what that was. And then the third one is or is not out yet.
It's four of the episodes have been released that are specifically dealing with Bethel Reading.
Yes.
But the broader series of episodes are in final production for season one. I believe it's going to end up being a two-season one. There's just so much content to go over. And so each episode's about about an hour long. And so it's released more like a series this go around, as opposed to a feature length documentary.
I was looking for it today, I couldn't find anything on YouTube except for the 15 minute long preview, which I do like because it's like speed reading it.
Yeah,
but not really. I saw you in there for like three seconds.
I don't have a major role in it, but definitely have an opportunity to. You know, to speak. I think that it's kind of nice that they wanted a continuationist in there because they are always leveled. Well, it's just a bunch of cessationists.
You can't be the only one, right?
I'm not the only one.
Yeah, there has to be other continuationists.
There are.
Yeah,
but they get leveled all the time. Yeah, yeah. You know, hey, it's just a bunch of cessationists. And so
it's
too easy to throw
the baby out with the bathwater with something like that. Yeah.
You want to define for those who might not know continuationist versus cessationist?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of different definitions to that. Sure. So, but I would say, generally speaking, a cessationist it doesn't mean the cessationists don't believe that God is still active and at work. I would say that that a lot of cessationists believe that maybe sign gifts came to an end, where a continuationist believe that, hey, everything that we see in Acts and Corinthians is still active today to some degree. I think though that what we have seen happening in greater charismania goes to show why this conversation is so important.
Sure.
Because there are some things happening that are clearly not biblical, and that's what American Gospel attempts to address, largely in the prophetic movement, what's called the New Apostolic Reformation. Do we need governing apostles and prophets in the church today? Things like that, and so it attempts to take on that one, which is a big one. That's why there's so much content.
And I'm gonna be honest, like my stereotype of Assemblies of God have always been what you just described.
Yeah.
They are the problem when it comes to the abuses of the gift, and I'm probably wrong in that. I'm starting to learn that I'm wrong in that, that that's not necessarily true, and that there's, just like with most affiliations, there's different flavors and different extremes and emphasis.
That was my understanding,
totally.
Too.
Yeah.
So,
I thought you guys were the problem.
That. Well,
sorry, you're not. You're a good dude. We'll hang out.
So I would say one of the things that that obviously, because though you would say a Pentecostal denomination is going to have a viewpoint that says gifts are for today. I think when you do that without being biblical, you get into big problems.
Right.
So, so I think that is probably, and so you could say that I'm sure this has disproportionately affected, different denominations and fellowships that are Pentecostal or would describe themselves as charismatic, even that there's going to be an openness to that. Although what we're seeing is that NAR is equal opportunity. It's deeply affected many Nazarene churches. It's deeply affected many Baptist churches. So it's an equal opportunity offender, but right. Obviously disproportionately affects churches that would probably be in a Pentecostal or charismatic stream.
You said NAR really fast.
Yeah, NAR.
Tell them what NAR is.
So NAR is really an umbrella term for a loosely connected movement, be made up of people who believe that there are modern day apostles and prophets, and I think a lot of times we might say big A versus big A. Little A, right? Like governing apostles and prophets, yeah. and they tend to have a lot of similar. Other beliefs that seem to be common but differ slightly from group to group. So it's kind of an umbrella term. But the defining thing would be new apostolic reformation, meaning this emphasis on apostles and prophets that have supernatural powers, that have revelation that's equal to or even greater than Scripture. Even if they don't come out right and say that, they treat it that way. Yep. And so it's very problematic.
Yeah. Thus, Bethel.
Yeah, Bethel Reddick.
The main focus.
Yeah, and people may not know.
Otherwise known as Hogwarts.
Yeah, so okay. Bethel was an Assemblies of God church.
The name of Harry Potter.
I didn't know that.
So Bethel had its roots in the Assemblies of God, and in 2006 separated from the Assemblies of God. But I actually went to college with Eric Johnson, who is Bill Johnson's son. Yeah. So yes, Bethel was an Assemblies of God church. So therefore, it's because of the relational connections, there is a lot of influence that was exerted, especially in the West Coast. But I would say that just has, it's the NAR tentacles have spread far beyond the West Coast.
Yeah.
It's a big movement all around the world.
So what's your connection to the American gospel? How did you wind up there?
Yeah. So I would just, sovereignty of God, right? So there was a church down in California that were very near and dear to our hearts. We attended that church. And a new pastor came into that church that was trying to, that called Bill Johnson his spiritual father, and was trying to take that in the Bethel Reading direction and stream. And some friends of ours called us up and said, "What can you tell us about Bethel?" I said, "I can tell you quite a bit." And so through that process, I got connected to some people who wrote a really great book, Holly Pivick and Doug Guyvett. If you've read, Counterfeit Kingdom, excellent book. I think every Christian should read it.
Yep.
It's very accessible. They've done some other stuff too, but that's a very accessible read for the average person to say, "What's this whole NAR thing about?" Mm-hmm. And that is a wonderful, wonderful primer book. But I worked a little bit with Holly and Doug through this church. I had Holly actually do a podcast about what was happening there, and just had her look into it. Through those connections, got connected to Brandon Kimber at American Gospel through all of that connectivity because of what was happening with that church down in California.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Eastmont guys had those two come and talk at their church
a while back. Yeah.
And I heard really good things about it.
Yeah. Holly and Doug, amazing, wonderful apologists working to help people understand what's going on in this errant movement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. I think you've kind of already spoke to this, but kind of as we're bringing this to a close, these things that American Gospel is exposing, I don't know if that's the right word, but that they're documenting. Maybe that's a better word. Why is it important? Why does it matter? Why should we pay attention to what they're doing?
Yeah. Well, if I were just sum it up, I would say that the NAR places a huge emphasis on elevating the individual and diminishing God. And so I think whenever we do that and the gospel emphasis becomes inward instead of outward, becomes about Jesus wasn't really acting as God, although they'll have some caveats to what they mean by that. But whenever you diminish the divine nature of God in the person of Jesus Christ, you end up with errant doctrine and errant gospels. Right. And so that's probably the bigger issue is that it diminishes the sovereignty and the power of God and elevates man.
Well, and again, if you're taking the spotlight away from the work of Christ and putting it on something else, that's demonic.
Absolutely.
And I'm just, you know, it's like, that's really dangerous.
Yes. Right.
The gospel is that's the highlight. This other stuff is not the highlight.
Correct.
And they're making all these other things, you know, the star
of the show. What I would say is the movement is full of what I would call simony, the sin of simony.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I want power. I don't necessarily, I want the kingdom, not the king.
I want to do tricks.
Right? I want to do, hence the name Hogwarts, right? So I want to pursue gifts instead of the giver of life.
Yeah, manifestation.
And so it's all about manifestation. And I would say that if you, and you're going to see this in, I would highly encourage people to go check out American Gospel, even get those first four episodes, because Bethel's influence is very strong.
Yeah.
When people say, why don't we, you know, listen to Bethel music at our church, for example, or why is that important? I think if you watch that, you're going to begin to understand why that's important, because that becomes a potential gateway into all of this. And just to be forthright, those churches, just like Bethel said, this is how we are going to get our message infiltrated into the culture, will be through our music and our initiatives of building up Bethel brand. So it's a big deal. I would say that sin of simony, though, is the is one of the defining things that we see, that people are chasing gifts and power instead of chasing Jesus.
Yep.
And that's a huge problem. And it leads to actual New Age practice. Yep. There's a lot of practices are extra biblical that are really demonic.
Yep.
And because of that, you end up having people a lot of times who deconstruct and say, why keep the seatbelt of Christianity on this at all?
Right.
If I can just have access to this New Age power, why not just go all in? But that's what happens when you begin to mix these things. It's very, very dangerous.
And it seems like maybe you've experienced you've had some damage done by some of this, because in that little soundbite I saw, it was brief and it was highly edited.
Yeah.
It sounded like you might have come out of something that damaged you or others around you permanently.
So the church I pastor used to be, like I said, 250, 300 people when I was growing up in that church. And through churches like Bethel would regularly bring, it was very, very early on in the movement, and Chris Valentin would bring students up, and Bethel School of Supernatural Ministry students, and they would infiltrate what was happening with ministry at the church, and so they began to get their tentacles into that, and over time, that split the church, because there were some people saying, hey, this doesn't seem right, there's some things that are off here, and that was just one of many kinds of people that they were bringing in, but looking back now, that was the earliest generation of what was happening with Bethel, and it was here at this church in Prineville.
That's
now,
crazy.
If you were to look at the churches in Central Oregon, and I'm just going to speak to the Assemblies of God churches, because I'm sure that there are others who have experienced this too. There have been three primary churches in Central Oregon that were infiltrated by Bethel and Bethel theology, and all three of them have suffered church splits and have really struggled, and all three are now back to healthy leadership.
Nice.
But some of them almost didn't make it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. If people wanted to check out those first four episodes, where would they find them?
Just go to American Gospel to their website. They've got or you can go to AGTV, AGTV.com, I think is the address, but you can
not AOG.
No, it's American Gospel.
Yeah.
American Gospel
yeah.
TV.
Yeah. Yeah. Not Assemblies of God TV.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys have your own TV?
Oh, they do.
So AGTV will get you connected to that. And you also, if you go to Amazon Prime or YouTube, you can get access to the previous American Gospels. Highly recommend those.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah. They're very good. They're
I really enjoyed the first one. I don't know why I haven't watched the second one. I just haven't. So
Christ Crucified is a wonderful. In fact, just talking about young adults, we actually took them through that. And they really enjoyed it. Yeah. And I thought that was really critical, because we were talking about having a 2% worldview, right, biblical worldview in our culture right now. So we need to get back to the basics.
Totally.
Yeah.
Amen.
Cool. Well, we're about at our time here, so we've covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if we'd kind of get through all of our list, and we got through
appreciate
most of it.
Appreciate you coming on, Aaron. And what we kind of want to do, we've been talking about it for a long time, is just get different pastors on here in Central Oregon. don't care what flavor you are, as long as you get the gospel right and right. and start to meet some of these guys and let our people yeah. meet these guys and build some better relationships. So we appreciate you driving all the way out here.
On, yeah. your, on your birthday.
Yeah.
On your
yeah.
birthday.
Oh, yeah, we yeah. didn't mention that.
Yeah.
yeah. Aaron's 50 today.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
a great present.
Big 5-0. Yeah.
yeah. Happy yeah. birthday.
I couldn't have asked for anything better than
yeah. like, what, chose what, to what spend a way, your birthday right? with right. us.
Yeah. What a way
also,
to celebrate 50.
For our... personally, for our people, Jeff Welch, actually, the pastor of CBC that's on here all the time. He's a mainstay on here. He's having complications after his last surgery. Still in the hospital. Hasn't come out yet. It's not good. We're going to try to go see him today. Yeah. But keep yeah. praying for the Welch
yeah,
family.
Pray for and, Jeff.
Yep. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. yeah. Well, maybe in a minute we can pray for Jeff. How can we pray for you and the ministry at First Assembly Prineville?
Well, I would say we are launching several major discipleship, and I say discipleship, it's just really following Jesus initiatives this year, and I'm really excited about them, but there's some big change to the way that we do things, and so be praying for that, because we are really excited to see people growing in their walk and with Christ. So we covet your prayers. Yeah,
yeah.
We want to see people. We want to see lives transformed. We're also launching a Celebrate Recovery ministry in January, because there was another church that called and said, "Hey, could you take this over for us?" And we really want it. We know there are a lot of hurting people with various kinds
sure.
of habits, hangups, and other things that are going on in their life.
Yep.
And so we really want to see that ministry impact Prineville. So
yeah.
we've got a lot going on, and gotcha. So we again cover your prayers.
You yeah. guys sound like a very outward,
yeah,
not insular,
yeah.
community
yeah.
of believers, which always yeah. like is so cool
right.
for us.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
our heart is there. Yeah. It's so cool to see people, Christians yeah. that are going, how can we
yeah.
infiltrate more of society and
yeah.
and culture? So yeah. yeah.
You would think that would be intuitive to
yeah.
you know,
well, the gospel's
it's
outward.
It's not always
yeah.
right.
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The gospel's
yeah.
outward. So if we're not living outward, we're missing, we have a core, you know, misunderstanding somewhere in what the gospel is.
Right,
so
sure.
we definitely look at that and say the gospel is outward. It's not inward focused.
Lots of Christians know that, but you guys are doing it. And
yeah.
it's just, it's encouraging
yep, it's
to
awesome.
Hear that you guys are doing that. So yeah. well done, brother.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks guys.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on.
Wonderful to be on here today.
Yeah. yeah. Well, what do you guys want to pray?
Yeah, I'll pray.
Pray for Lord. Aaron, pray for Jeff.
Yeah. Thank yeah. you, Lord, for our time, what we discussed. I thank you for our common bond, no matter what our background is, no matter what our story is, no matter where you found us and how you found us, it's all about you. And I thank you for guys like Aaron that are where that's just an obvious reality in how they live and what they do. And so I ask that you continue to bless the work of his hands, all the outreach opportunities, all the growth opportunities that are happening right now. God, I pray that you would just bring those about to fruition in the best possible way, in the most effective way, that people will be reached for your glory. We do pray for the Welches right now, God, that you would comfort them with the only the kind of comfort that you provide, that your presence would be known, felt, experienced, soothing while they're challenged right now.
Yes.
And that you would allow the doctors to just figure out what's going on and get a handle on it. So we thank you for your son. We thank you that the tomb's empty. We thank you that we have a great hope ahead of us every day, regardless of what's going on around us in this world.
Awesome.
And so we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Thanks for tuning in to One Decent Pastor. If you'd like more information about the church, go to our website at thedoor3r.org.